following program is a special presentation from the Talking Information Center. Please enjoy the show.
Welcome to TIC's Radio Theater. I'm Laura Kerrigan, the director for tonight's performance, and we are so happy to finally have an audience after over a two-year hiatus. TIC started their radio program in 2017, and through that effort, we've been able to bring comedies and thrillers and mysteries, even westerns, to our listeners. Because of accessibility or financial issues, our radio plays may be one of the only opportunities that our homebound listener has to enjoy live theater. So we think it's a really important part of the programming. Tonight for the holidays, we turn to Charles Dickens' classic tale, A Christmas Carol. And when you think of that story, you of course think of Victorian England. But yeah, that story's been adapted in so many different forms. Cartoons, puppets, even transported to modern day. Well, tonight, one of the most clever and charming adaptations is when it was transported to the Old West for a Christmas episode of a Jimmy Stewart Western series called The Six Shooter, which aired from 1953 to 1954. How does the story of Ebenezer Scrooge translate to the Old West? Well, lean in, listen up, while we give you our version of Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol.
Greetings from the Talking Information Center, and hello to our listeners. Tonight, the Talking Information Center's Radio Theater presents an episode of The Six Shooter, Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol. Originally broadcast on December 20th, 1953, this series was based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legend.
The man in the saddle was angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. There was a nip in the air, not a freezing, biting, angry nip, but sort of tingle that made the morning stars shimmer and swung them out of their orbits a little closer to the earth. Oh, it was a winter nip, all right, but not a hard winter. Not a winter when the cattle would come down from the high places, hooking their noses into the ice-encrusted ground. It was a mild winter nip, mild enough so the breath on the boy on the pinto turned only a faint gray as he rode toward the campfire where the man was sitting.
Well, howdy.
Hello, mister. I saw your fire, and I thought maybe you wouldn't mind if I gave my pony a chance to warm up.
Sure, sure. Make yourself at home.
Easy, Blackie, easy. Are you heading for Thompson's Corners, mister?
That's right.
I just came from there.
Oh, why, you must have been riding all night.
Just about. You see, I'm running away from home.
Oh, is that so? Well, seems kind of funny thing you picked this time of year to run away. So close to Christmas, I mean.
Oh, I hate Christmas.
Oh?
It's just for kids anyhow.
Well,
I heard Aunt Millie say so. Christmas is for children, that's what she said. Johnny's old enough to do without all that fuss and nonsense.
Oh, you don't live with your folks, huh, Johnny?
No, sir. They died about 8 months ago.
Oh, I see.
Christmas was all right when I was with them. Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Oh, yes.
It just beats me the way folks take Christmas so serious.
Well, I don't know.
As if getting presents made any difference. As if I really cared about that pocket knife.
Is that what you wanted? A pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything. I just wish there wasn't any Christmas, that's all.
Well, I guess you're not the first person to feel that way. You know, it seems to me I remember a story once about a fella who felt the same way about Christmas as you do. Just didn't have any use for it.
What happened to him?
Well, I doubt if I could call it to mind after all this time, but as I recollect now, I remind you, this may not be word for word, but as I recollect, the man that it's about, the one that hated Christmas, that is, well, he was a real skinflint, he was. just as stingy as they come. Yeah, his name was, Eben. Something like that.
Eben?
Eben. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. Well, being so tight-fisted, this fellow Eben, he got to be the richest man in the whole territory.
He owned a ranch?
Oh, sure. He had four of them. Four ranches and store buildings, farms, maybe a bank or two.
Oh, boy, he was rich. I bet he had a mighty fine ranch house.
No, he didn't have a ranch house. Now, Eben wasn't the sort to spend money on a ranch house unless there was profit in it. You see, he just lived alone in town, had himself a steady room at the hotel. But anyway, one night while Eben was sitting in his room having supper, Christmas Eve it was, well, on this particular Christmas Eve, his only kin, a nephew, lived in the same town, he stopped by the hotel.
I just wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle, and invite you to our place for dinner tomorrow.
Christmas? Eh, fiddlesticks. I suppose you'd be closing up your livery stable for the occasion.
Why, sure, Uncle Eb.
And just how will the horses know it's Christmas, huh? Answer me that.
Well, if they don't know, we will. Can I tell Sally to expect you at 3?
You can expect me all you like, but I ain't coming. Not at 3 or any other time. Oh, and if you're making so much money you can afford to be giving parties, maybe I ought to think about raising the rent on the stable.
Oh, no.
Now get out of here before I lose my temper. All this nonsense about Christmas. Fiddlesticks!
Well, after that, Johnny, the nephew didn't stick around there. He got out of Eben's hotel room with a regular gallop. But it wasn't very long before Eben had another visitor. He was a young fella, tall, lanky, not very good at speaking, just a plain, ordinary cowpoke. He was the foreman of the S&M Ranch.
Well, it took you long enough to get here. Where you been, selling off some of my herd without telling me about it?
Oh, I know, sir. The day you rode by, I was out in the range hunting strays.
Yeah, it was a good thing I desired to check up on you. Now, what's that cabin doing over there by Holly Creek? And who are those people staying there?
Well, they're my family. I built the shack for them myself.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to have a bunch of nesters in my property. You tear it down.
But one of my boys has been sick. I can't afford to rent.
As if it was my concern. Listen, it's up to you to take care of your family and what you earn. So you see to it you get rid of that shack tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh, well, then you'll have plenty of free time to tear it down. Now, I'll be out the day after to be sure you done it. Good night.
Well, there wasn't much use in arguing. Foreman knew that, so he put on his hat and shuffled out. Now Eben was alone again. At least he thought he was alone. The clock on the mantel started striking 8, and it was about the time he turned in. So he put on his flannel shirt and reached for the kerosene lamp to put it on the stool beside the bed. And right then, the strangest thing happened.
What's that?
Johnny, old Eben saw a man's face looking right at him from inside that lamp. Eyes, hair, nose, mouth, whiskers, just all plain as day.
Jake?
It was old Jake, Eben's partner. There wasn't any mistake about it at all. And it was Jake right to a T. Well, Eben sure didn't like the idea of having Jake right in the same room with him. You see, Jake had been dead for over 7 years. Not that Eben really believed in ghosts or haunts or anything like that. He told himself he was just imagining all this.
Yeah, I just got to get a hold of myself.
He put out his hand to turn down the wick, but all of a sudden, his fingers started trembling. And there was Jake again, across the room this time, standing right by the corner. And when the lamp slipped out of his hand, the room didn't get dark at all. Jake seemed to be surrounded by a splotch of bright yellow light, and he was wearing the same boots, breeches, and leather jacket that he had had on 7 years ago, the day he died. But as Jake came closer, Eben could see he was wearing something else, a small leather saddle strapped across his back, and hanging down from it were two saddlebags, stuffed so full of gold nuggets, mortgage papers, and land grants that Jake could hardly drag them across the floor.
You recognize me, Eben?
Why, sure. It's you, Jake. Sure, I'd never forget you. But what are you doing here? Why are you wearing that get-up?
Always thinking about land and money. Always scheming and conniving. That's why I wear it. And that's why I've come to warn you, Eben. The saddle you are fixing up for yourself is even heavier than mine.
But I don't know what you mean, Jake. I ain't done no wrong. I ain't never done folks no wrong.
Have you ever done them any good? Any good at all?
Well, sure. I worked hard and saved my money. I ain't been a burden on anybody. Oh, you should see our ranches, Jake. Oh, the way I built them up.
I have seen them many times. And I've seen a lot more than that, too. That's my punishment. To spend eternity traveling around, seeing mankind with its trials and tribulations, with its joys and hopes.
Oh, is that so terrible?
Oh, Eben, to watch them and not be able to help them? You'll find out how terrible it is. You'll find out.
Well, now, there must be some way of avoiding this. You were always my friend, Jake. Tell me what to do.
Eben, you've got to find out for yourself.
But how?
Tonight, at 1, you'll be haunted by a ghost.
Another ghost?
Indeed, Eben. Pay him some heed.
Wait, Jake! Don't leave me with... Jake!
The yellow light sort of faded away, and then the ghost was gone. It was just like he hadn't even been there. And then something caught the corner of Eben's eye. A little glimmer on the floor, and he bent over to pick it up.
Yeah, what's this? Gold nugget. Now, where on earth did this come from?
And then he remembered.
Oh.
Those saddlebags of Jake's, they've been filled clear to the brim with gold nuggets.
Gee whiz, a gold nugget. So Jake's ghost really had been there, huh, mister?
Yep. There just wasn't any doubt about it, Johnny.
Well, what happened then? Did the other ghost turn up? The one Jake said was coming to see Eben?
Oh, sure, Johnny. He was right on time, too. Eben was lying in bed wide awake, of course. He hadn't been able to do much sleeping. Too scared, you know. It was kind of peculiar. Eben was half scared the ghost would come and half scared he wouldn't. But before the sound of the clock had died away, there he was. He was sitting in Eben's rocking chair like he had been there all night long. And this ghost was a young fella. Maybe 18 or 19. All dutied up the way young bucks like to dress. You know, fancy chaps, checkered shirt, and a red bandana tied around his neck.
Howdy, Eben. Heard you've been expecting me.
Yeah, I guess so.
You ready to take a little trip?
Where to?
Back. Way back through the years.
But how can I go?
It's real easy. You see, I am the ghost of Christmas past. Your past, Eben. Let's shove off.
The next thing Eben knew, he and the ghost were standing out on a snow-covered prairie. There was a circle of covered wagons in front of them, and the people from the wagons were gathered together, listening to a tall, white-bearded man. He was reading the Bible.
And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord.
The ghost turned and pointed to a boy sitting away from the others on the tailboard of one of the wagons. Small boy, oh, about 10 years old, with hollow cheeks and his eyes all red from crying.
Oh, no, no!
It was Eben himself on a Christmas day a long, long time ago. Not a very happy Christmas either. It was only a week since the auction stampede, where his ma had been killed when she fell from the wagon. His pa had died from yellow fever the year before.
No, I don't want to look at him anymore. Can't you show me another Christmas?
Well, it was no sooner said than done. Now Eben and the ghost were in the bunkhouse. And then Eben saw himself again. He was 10 years older than the boy in the prairie. He was lying on a blanket staring up at the ceiling. And then his pal Jake came running in, all out of breath.
Come on, Eb.
Get a clean shirt on. We got an invite to a party.
Huh?
Yeah, the boss is throwing a big shindig. Says he'll fire us if we don't show up.
Evan couldn't help remembering that party. Oh, the roast beef and the baked ham, square dancing and the pretty girls. He couldn't help but saying out loud to the ghost.
Yeah, how was I?
What was that, Evan?
Nothing, Mr. Spirit. Nothing at all. I was just remembering how I treated my foreman today, that's all.
After that, the ghost took Evan to three or more of those Christmases. And none of them were very happy. Especially that Christmas when the young schoolgirl, sitting on the sofa, unwrapped the tiny box Evan gave her and then handed it back to him.
Oh, it's a lovely ring, Evan, but I can't wear it.
Oh, you're not courting somebody else.
No, Evan, but you are. You're courting something else.
What?
Why, land and cattle, profits. They mean more to you than I ever would. I'm sorry.
Mr. Ghost, please, no more of the past. I've seen enough. A man wants to forget.
Sure, Evan, whatever you say.
And before Evan could blink his eyes, he was right back in that hotel room. But once he got there, he blinked real hard because all of a sudden, the ghost was becoming a different person. He was getting fatter, and his stomach popped out 2 or 3 inches. A few wrinkles creased his cheeks, and finally his chaps turned into a shiny blue suit with a heavy gold chain dangling across the vest.
What's happened to you? Why are you so different now?
You seem to be getting tired of the past, so I thought we might take a gander at the present, if you got no objections.
The hotel room just melted away, and Evan was looking at that cabin his foreman had built on Holly Creek. Well, that cabin was sure crowded. Oh, there must have been 5 or 6 children all helping their mother get out the Christmas dinner, all laughing and talking. But when their father came in, he had a long face and a tired mouth, and his wife looked up and wanted to know what was troubling him.
Well, I was thinking about old Evan.
Oh, well, that's not a very pleasant thought for Christmas, Bob. Oh, by the way, what did you want to tell me yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
No, of course not. Let's get on with dinner. Sit down. Now, where's my Tim?
Now, Bob looked around the room, and he was pretending he didn't see the little fella in the corner, the boy with an iron brace on his leg and a wooden crutch up against the wall. The little champ wasn't going to be ignored.
Oh, there you are.
Bob picked him up and carried him over to the table.
God bless this food, this house, and us and our friends, and even old Evan. Amen.
The family found that part about Evan a little hard to swallow, but they managed, and Tim was the last one to chime in.
God bless us, everyone.
Evan didn't want to watch what was going on in that cabin any longer, but the next place the goat showed him wasn't any easier on him. It was a big party going on at his nephew's house. One of the ladies was blindfolded, you see, and she was trying to pin the tail onto a donkey. But there was something peculiar about this donkey, about the way it was drawn. It looked more like a person than an animal. Well, Evan recognized who it was supposed to be right away.
You see, folks, I invited Uncle Evan to be with us, but he turned me down flat. So I figured we'd have him here in the spirit, if not in the flesh.
Right back in that hotel room again. That's where Evan found himself.
Spirit, Spirit, you showed me the past and the present. What's left to see?
The future, Evan. The future.
And that's how Evan came to see a Christmas of the future. A cold, bitter Christmas. There were 2 men standing on a street corner, coat collars turned up so they could keep out the snow.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Dead as a doornail.
Sure was a Christmas present I never expected.
At least whoever handles his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was.
I wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
And in a frame house near the side of the street, on the edge of town, a woman was speaking to her husband.
Funny. To me, he has been dead for years. I haven't even thought of him since, well, I don't know when. Wouldn't you know, Once, I was really fond of him.
Hey, Ghost, who are they talking about? Who is that man on the street? And that woman I used to know? Who is it that's dead? Tell me.
And the ghost slowly turned and stretched out a long, thin, bony finger. And right there, at the end of that finger, was a tombstone, all covered with weeds. Eben could barely make out the name that was carved out on it.
Ebenezer Scrooge. Oh, no. No, no. What's this? Where am I?
You know what? He was right back in his own bed, in his own nightshirt, and the sun was streaming through the frosted windows. But Eben didn't stay there for very long. Not long at all. He got into his boots and trousers as fast as he could and dashed down the stairs, out into the street. While seeing that the store had been closed gave Eben quite a problem. Well, it'd have to make Fuzzy Wagner just open up the butcher shop, that's all. Of course, Fuzzy didn't have a choice, seeing that the shop is located at one end of the building. When Eben told him what he wanted, a turkey, a ham, well...
No. You better make it two hams and send it up to the cabin on the S&M Ranch and for them not to know that I ordered them. Now, you understand, Fuzzy. Now, here's the money. And a little extra for your troubles.
Before Fuzzy could get his jaw shut up again, Eben was on his way headed straight out to his nephew's house. And Eben was the life of the party. Oh, the way he carried on, making jokes, laughing, telling stories about himself. He insisted when they used that donkey to put his face on it when they play games.
Because that's what I've been all these years, a real four-footed, long-eared donkey. Yee-haw, yee-haw.
The next morning, though, that's what Eben enjoyed the most. He was up bright and early and hitched the team to the buckboard and drove out to the S&M, hurrying up the horses all the way.
Come on, Bess. Come on, Martha.
If he could just get out there before his foreman started tearing down that cabin.
Slow, Bess. Slow, Martha. Whoa. Well, Robert.
Yes, sir?
I see you haven't carried out my orders.
Yes, sir, but it was Christmas, but I just couldn't tell them. I'll do it today.
No, sir, this is the last straw.
Sir.
I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fella.
Oh, sir.
Now, that cabin's coming down. No buts about it.
Oh, my.
And then we're building a new ranch house in its place, big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Yes, sir, and I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob. Even if I am a day late. Well, not a day, more like half a lifetime. But Merry Christmas anyway. And as your son says, God bless us, everyone.
Well, that's the way things worked out, Johnny, more or less.
Well, that's a fine story, Mister, real fine. I know why you told it to me.
How's that?
Well, so I understand about Christmas and how important it is to do for other people instead of just thinking about yourself.
Well, no, I didn't have that in mind. The story just happened to come into my head, that's all.
Well, I want to give Aunt Millie something. A present, maybe. Ah, shucks, what could I give her? I have no money.
Well, of course, there's lots of things that don't cost one penny. Not a single red cent, you know.
Huh?
Well, let's see. Take that little spruce over there. It'd be really easy to cut that down with a little fixing. A few doodads from around the house. I bet you could make a Jim Dandy Christmas tree.
Well, I suppose so. But what's a Christmas tree without something to put under it?
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Johnny, you don't happen to know Jim Bender, do you? Thompson Corner has three daughters?
Oh, he has two, Sarah and Emmy.
Oh, is that so? I'm spending Christmas with them, and it looks like I'm carrying an extra present. It's a pretty little red bonnet with feathers on it.
Oh, I couldn't take it, mister.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of giving it to you, Johnny, but I was sort of hoping you'd show me the trail from here on in. Of course, it would mean you turning around and going back home. If I was the cause of your changing plans, I'd feel obligated to pay you back some way.
Well, I really couldn't take it.
Well, it's only fair. I don't have much money, so if you wouldn't mind accepting the bonnet, you'd be doing me a real favor, Johnny.
There's Aunt Millie out in the yard. She looks madder than a wet hen.
Well, there is a resemblance. I'd have to admit to that.
Where in tarnation have you been, John Carl? I have been looking high and low for you since dawn.
I just went for a little ride, Aunt Millie, to get a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlesticks.
Well, this gentleman helped me cut it down. I'll take it inside. Be right back, mister.
As if we had any use for a Christmas tree. I suppose he's figuring there'll be a lot of presents under it.
No, I don't think so. But just between you and me, I got a hunch there might be at least one present waiting for someone.
What are you talking about?
Nah, it wouldn't be fair of me to speak before Christmas, you know.
You don't mean he's got something for me, do you?
Nah, you mustn't get so curious so early now.
But I thought he didn't like me. I thought he was upset about having to live here with an old maid. I guess I just don't know nothing about kids. Nothing at all. I don't deserve to get a present.
Well, I better get moving along. Say goodbye to Johnny for me, and I wonder if you'd give this to him. Tell him the little blade on it is kind of dull, but...
A pocket knife?
Yeah.
Now, how did you know? Oh, God bless you, mister. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You have been listening to Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol, an episode of The Six Shooter. This Talking Information Center's radio theater production features the voice talents of Don Smith, Rick Mason, Kristen Arute, Steve Verta, George Krein, Penny Cunningham, Karen Hayes, Brian Kling, Jeff Rogers, and James Upton. It was produced and directed by Laura Kerrigan and engineered by John Shea with assistance from Liz Collins. On behalf of our cast and everyone here at the Talking Information Center, we would like to wish you a joyous holiday season and a safe and healthy New Year.